This is a replay of the Tuesday night, April 4th, WGN show. We started about 11:30 Central Time. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call, and I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday, and unless sports preempts us, that's from 10 to 1 Central in the evening. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip, for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We got a couple hours to spend together, and I hope you'll give me a call. I hope I'll find reason for you to do that. 888-876-5593. 8888. Raleigh. Well, plenty of stories about the economy as usual, but here's one where it really caused me to raise those eyebrows, and actually Chicago-based. McDonald's has temporarily shut its U.S. corporate offices ahead of layoffs. Now, that's not subtle. You get right down to it. Apparently, closing all U.S. offices this week, corporate offices, as it prepares to inform corporate employees about layoffs as part of a broader company restructuring. The Wall Street Journal had an article on this over the weekend, and it was an internal email that was sent around last week to U.S. employees and some international staff. McDonald's asked them to work from home Monday through Wednesday of this week, right now, so it can deliver staffing decisions virtually. Yeah, that is not what I'd call good news. Yeah, don't come in. Yeah. Can't imagine they're going to say anything good. It's unclear, of course, what they're saying and how many employees will be laid off, but it can't possibly be good news. And they're saying during the week of April 3rd, we'll communicate key decisions related to roles and staffing levels across the organization. And McDonald's also asked employees to cancel all in-person meetings with vendors and other outside parties at the headquarters. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Other than that, Mrs. Kennedy had you like Dallas. Not exactly good news. McDonald's didn't respond to requests for comments, I guess. And actually, it was back in January that they said they review corporate staffing levels as part of an updated business strategy. And that's business as usual. But I've never, ever heard of one saying, stay home because we'll be informing you of layoffs. So since it is Chicago-based, what have you heard? 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. Yeah, I'm curious about that. And yeah, I've heard some say, you know, when fast food starts to lay off, you know the economy's in trouble. But the reality is that McDonald's has kind of been my go-to place because of those dollar any size soft drinks. Yeah, that's a winner for me. Yeah, unlike Burger King. Whoa, a small Coke was $2.79. Yeah, I tell you what. Now, while we're on the economic topic, tangentially anyway, one in three New York parents. So that's a third. Actually, it's 34% if you want the exact figure. Say their adult children are still living at home. That's a lot of kids, to say the least. And 45% of New York parents say they're still helping their adult children financially. And that, by the way, is less than the national average of that. 11% say they're dipping into retirement savings to help adult children. And as I say, the national statistics are actually worse. It looks like parents of Gen Z and millennials are doing more than just offering emotional support after the kids turn 18. Yeah, so apparently the interesting part is when asked about future plans, virtually none of them said that they thought the kids were moving out. 88% said not this year. So there you have it. We talk about, you know, how people are making it. Well, I guess if you're young, maybe you're living at home with parents who have a paid for house or what have some form of retirement. But it just doesn't add up to me. So maybe we'll find out more as time goes on. But that's bordering on almost serious. Speaking of almost serious, oh man, have you been following the Resolver web blocking case? Now, what this is Sony, and they actually brought this to a German court, which was favorable a couple of years ago now, but more rulings have come out, and it looks like the courts in Germany are saying, yeah, Sony, you can order resolvers to block webs. Now, you're saying, what's a resolver and what's going on? All right. Well, as you probably know, when you type in a URL like WGNradio.com. The internet doesn't know what WGNradio.com is. It's a name. There's got to be something that ties the name to an IP address because that's how the internet works. And there are numerous ways that you can access a DNS server if you have if you have a broadband connection, period. It can be a cable modem or fiber or whatever it is. That usually comes with a DNS server, and if you don't change it, it's theirs. And by the way, that can be golden to a provider because they can sell the information of where you go and what you do. But you also have private servers that guarantee you security and privacy. And then you have Google, of course. It doesn't guarantee anything other than speedy results. But so when you're putting in your own DNS server information, like for Google 8.8.8.8 or for Quad 9, 9.9.9.9.9, I prefer 1.1.1, but you can look it up. In any event, here is the deal. Now that you know what these are, and that's the only way, by the way, that when you type in a URL, your browser is going to go to it. Because it's not going to know the name. It absolutely has to have a number. And something has to tell them. So it's sort of like the internet phone directory. And you can decide which phone directory your computer is using. So, all right, be it as it may. Sony claims that there are people who are, in fact, infringing upon their rights by stealing their music or what have you. Copyright infringement, things of that nature. And what they did a couple years ago was they went to court and demanded that the DNS name servers, the resolvers, that the DNS name servers be liable for the sites that they direct people to. Now, the problem here is that a name server isn't involved any way with content. It does one thing. It takes the registered domains and turns them into IP addresses so that the internet can work. It's that simple. So when you're talking about a court ruling that says, yes, Sony has the right to require DNS name servers to block sites, you're talking about censorship of the internet on the primary level. And as I say, this has been going on a couple of years, but now what has happened is in the last couple of months, case after case in Germany say, sure, go ahead. Now, in the case Quad 9, they moved to Switzerland, where privacy rights are more upheld. And theoretically, this ruling would only affect Germany. But regardless, the idea that that something as completely and I don't know the word I'm looking for here, but completely agnostic as to any online content. Yeah, nothing to do with it whatsoever. That's just resolving domain names so the internet can work. If they can be liable for the content that's on it, and of course, if a provider like Sony can decide whether or not the public should be able to see a site and block entire sites by virtue of the fact that there's one video or something on it, that's the end of the internet. And this is horrendous. And, you know, there are ways, again, at this point in time, if you have a name server that's blocking sites and you don't want to use them, you've got other sites you can use. There's still workarounds, absolutely. But if these things become precedent and this starts to happen, that is the end of the freedom of the internet. On any level. And of course, there's a number of players, particularly politically, that want to see that. China, of course, notorious for forcing providers to not allow Chinese citizens to get to certain sites and all that for political reasons. Again, this obviously for economic reasons. And the precedent is just horrendous. And of course, Sony says, oh, no, 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 that's not a problem. Yeah, maybe not for them. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. I've got several other things on my mind, but the bottom line, oh, by the way, including Markey's answers. And you're saying what are you talking about? Well, you'll remember that a senator wrote to the major car manufacturers asking them about their plans for AM radio. He got some letters back, and the news isn't good. So we'll get to that too. But your calls take precedence over everything. So 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. We'll get to Eduardo and Midway in moments right here on WGN Radio.
Please don't say no more.
Raleigh James, of course, that's Major Lance. That's a B-side. The A-side was Rhythm, which was number 2 on the R&B charts and 24 on the pop charts. But I thought Please Don't Say No More was the winner on that, as far as I'm concerned. Well, Major Lance would have turned 84 today. Born in 1939 in Mississippi, but his family moved to Chicago when he was a kid. He grew up in Cabrini Green, went to Wells High, and sadly died in his sleep in 1994 in suburban Atlanta. Heart disease, just 55 years old. A true loss. All right, and of course, his daughter was mayor of Atlanta. 888-876-5593 takes us to Eduardo in Midway. What's happening tonight, Eduardo?
Hey, Raleigh, what's... What a evening. I went to the Figure Museum and saw First Kings of Europe. It's an exhibit that they did a little like pre-party before it goes out to the public. A friend had a pass.
Yeah.
So I was over there and we had some nice food and socializing and all that. But I wanted to come because, I don't know, I'm a little bit, I talked about this before, concerned about young people going into adulthood. I noticed these, I saw this in Daily Mail, I thought it was interesting, these moms took their son and daughter and they moved to Ireland and Munich, and they're thinking, well, here, over here, we don't have to worry about putting locks or having security guards, the works, it's kind of like a utopian society feeling.
I would assume that's very area dependent, because a blanket statement saying overall, I don't think that's accurate. But I also wonder, are there areas in America that are still idyllic to that degree where you don't worry about that stuff? And the other thing, and I'd be curious if the article went into this, even in the best situations, are the kids turning out any different? Are the kids living at home over there the way they are here?
Are they getting good grades?
Well,
yeah, they didn't mention any of that.
Yeah, if they're still in school. But, I mean, when they get out of school, do they individuate and leave the nest like everybody else before them? Or are they still at home when they're 36?
Yeah, I was surprised to hear, and I heard this, I think, today, Winnetka, New Cheer, they have truancy problem over there. Now, their parents are rich, so, I mean, I guess they can survive, but I don't know if you're kind of like lower class or middle class, that might be a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. The other thing, of course, when you're talking in an area like Winnetka, is how many kids are in private schools also, because when you're talking truancy, I assume you're talking the public schools. So I don't know. There's probably a lot more to that story, but it would be interesting to know.
And kids are not even getting driver's license, because they're not interested in owning a car, because, what, they get Uber?
You know, I've heard that, too, and I find that inexplicable. I remember when I was 13, I knew exactly how many days it was before I would be 16 and get my full driver's license, and I literally had a calendar where I counted them down. You know, I knew I was saving money. I knew exactly what car I was getting. Man, that 16 was coming, and I was going to have that driver's license. So I can't imagine not, you know, lusting for a car. Now, I realize that cars of the late 50s and the early 60s were much more lust-worthy. You know, I'd give several gallons for a good fin, but even so, the idea that kids don't want responsibility, including things that give them the freedom of movement, such as a car, is astounding to me.
Yeah, there's no thirst for ownership like it was in the old days, unless it's like a cell phone or a laptop. That's kind of something they would love to have, be an owner, but like a car or a job or a house, definitely not.
Which is a real change. And there's obviously many people societally who are welcoming that, but it certainly is a limiter in terms of free choices. But, you know, every day I'll drive by areas of new single-family homes that aren't for sale, for rent only. And I realize part of that is the economy, but part of that is people who are saying, I just don't want to own anything.
Yeah, Walmart workers are going to get laid off, too. I heard that thing, too. Another thing, too, technology-wise, ChatGPT is being banned in Italy. Did you hear that one?
What?
The ChatGPT?
Really?
The new, it's being banned in Italy.
No.
In my company, I work for a corporation, they're hesitant about doing a rollout there. So there's people hesitant about taking that leap into the next technology age.
Well, I think that's true. And I think any time you are looking at that type of a paradigm switch, and we've talked a lot about this, really, the entire lead-up of the Industrial Revolution was toward the discovery of digital, and that changes mankind like nothing else since the wheel, no doubt about that. But I guess the deal with Italy, all I can figure for ChatGPT is that they're afraid of privacy violations.
Yeah, right. I forgot to mention that. You hit it on a mark,
And, you know, I'm not sure that that's a bad thing to worry about. Also, how are they verifying that they aren't 12-year-olds? You know, I mean, there's safety and there's privacy, and I think those are legitimate societal concerns.
Yeah, and that's how they do it with, like, I guess some of these dating apps where you have it's an adult pretending to be some younger person.
Well, and sometimes it's the FBI trolling for someone who wants that younger person, of course. You know, as I say, on the internet, they don't know if you're a dog, so maybe you're talking to a Saint Bernard.
Yeah.
Woof.
Well, cell phone, 50 years. Can you believe that, Raleigh? 50 years, cell phone anniversary.
Well, yes and no. Absolutely. Not the kind you're carrying in your pocket, but yes, that's absolutely true. And there's a Chicago connection to that, too. And you've ended the hour, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay,
thanks.
Have a good evening.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
So 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Claudine Clark on Chancellor, 1959, The Telephone Game. That's the B-side to Walkin' in a Cemetery. You'll not be surprised that neither were hits. However, it is The Telephone Game, and it was 50 years ago yesterday that the first cell call transpired, and an interesting one it was. It was Martin Cooper. And today, Martin Cooper is probably known more as the husband of the woman who started Jitterbug. I kid you not. Great call. But Martin was a hell of an engineer, and he worked for Motorola. But what sparked his interest was AT&T. And in the 60s, the latter 60s, AT&T determined that the next coming thing was the in-dash car phone. And I got to admit, I lusted for one. As far, you know, before that, it was mostly the ship-to-shore things in the cars and all this. So I thought that this was just, you know, the bee's knees. I thought this was going to be great. But Martin saw it a little differently. Oh, by the way, AT&T not only wanted to put the cars in the dashes, they wanted to control the network and be the provider for all of this. So that got Motorola's interest. And it was Martin who said, "The hell with the dash. People want to be mobile." And so he and his team worked on a phone, and yeah, the Dyna something or other. But in any event, it was April 3rd, 1973, on a sidewalk in Manhattan, on Avenue of the Americas, back then 6th Avenue, that, although I guess it had been Avenue of the Americas by then. Anyway, Martin Cooper picks up the phone, and who does he call? Bell Labs, AT&T in New Jersey, to say, "Hi, call it on the cell phone." And that was the first cell phone call, and probably nobody on Avenue of the Americas had any idea history was being made, and it was. AT&T continued to try, but Motorola was absolutely in there. Now, that's not to say that AT&T wasn't a player, and how did Chicago get into the story when so far we're talking about Bell Labs in New Jersey and streets in Manhattan? The very first cellular mobile service network was in Chicago, and it debuted on October 13th, 1983. It was Ameritech, later AT&T. So the first public cell phone network, and not on this date, like I say, October 13th, 1983, but all started with Martin Cooper's phone call, successful phone call in 1973, yesterday. So the history of the cell phone. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, James in Oregon. How you doing, James?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Good. What's new?
Yeah, not much. I was intrigued with your call with Eduardo, and then also then you talk about cell phones and stuff.
Yeah.
When I was just a young man in Ohio, working for Ohio Bell, my supervisor had a car phone.
Yeah.
And a nice little device in the car, but he had a piece of equipment in the trunk that took up half the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
To make that thing work. And then, do you remember the they called them bag phones?
Yes, I had a bag phone. But before that, the first car phones, like I said, they were more ship to shore, and I spent more time waiting for a dial tone than doing anything else.
Yeah, well, I know even my boss, I don't know how his, I never really used it, but at one time they even had it where you couldn't dial on it. You had to pick it up, and you went to the mobile operator.
It was signaling.
He would connect you.
Right.
Yeah, like that. But I was going to comment on, in Europe, on the schooling over there. I spent 6 years in Germany working over there, from 2008 to 2014.
What were you doing?
And
What kind of work?
Schools, they don't mess.
Yeah. What kind of
work? I was a contractor to the government for called DISA, Defense Information Systems Agency.
Okay.
And maintaining all the circuits that went throughout Europe down into Southwest Asia,
okay,
Africa, and even back anywhere around the world. If we had a couple other sites throughout, the one in the continental U.S. and one, I think, in Hawaii, and then another place, and if they were over swamped or if they weren't manned enough, we would take over their stuff, or they would take over our stuff if we weren't manned enough.
Yeah,
things like that. And then we had field engineers, what they call them, techs, that would go out and repair the equipment, and then we work with all the major telecoms in the world.
Sure.
Really, Dutch Telecom, British Telecom, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, all these different companies and stuff. So, mm-hmm. anyways, it was a lot of stuff I can't talk about what we watched, but
sure.
But that's what we did. We were basically the telephone company, you know.
Yes.
For the government and that. But I met and knew a lot of Germans, of course, who I lived, we called on the economy. I lived out in a little town, just a little village outside of Stuttgart, uh-huh. Germany, a little town called Echterdingen. And anyways, if the child is, when they're by 14, the government decides they don't go to school anymore because they don't show the
aptitude.
What do you call it?
Yeah, the aptitude,
the ability,
sure.
aptitude
right.
to go mm-hmm. in. They take them out and they have to go find a job as an apprentice,
mm-hmm.
or they go into the workforce. They might be picking up trash or something,
right?
Or cleaning streets or pouring concrete or whatever. But they're not going to pay for their education.
Well, and that was very, very big, as you know, in the Soviet Union, where bottom line is the government decided exactly what you were going to do. And while I think that, you know, a free citizen should have certain rights, I don't think it's a bad idea to emphasize trade and tech. And especially today, when you look at what college degrees cost and what they get you for most graduates, I think trade and tech is the way to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are, you're paying some of these schools $70,000 a year to go to college and
oh, I know, right? And major in what? Sociology? That's really going to help.
Yeah. Well, I listened to a talk show the other week, I think it was, and a man called in. He had a business. He needed truck drivers, and he says, I can start them out at $90,000 a year.
Wow.
And he said, I can't get anybody.
Oh,
I can't
hard.
Get enough people.
That's
but he
hard.
Says, I get people with bachelor degrees wanting jobs at $60,000, and I can't use them.
Well, exactly. Although it'd behoove them to learn how to drive the darn truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was, pretty interesting in that and stuff. And
we used to do that. Yeah, we used to do that here to a good degree, where it was very common that the schools would have two tracks: the academic track or the trade tech track. And there used to be a lot of cooperative ventures. And then I think a few things changed it societally. Of course, everybody suddenly thought that the college degree was the ticket to middle class. But the other thing, of course, was Vietnam. Most males, at least, majored in, I don't want to go to Vietnam, and I don't blame them a bit. So that sort of changed the landscape. But today, to me, if I had a child today, I would be encouraging them to go into trades.
Yeah, go. Well, and in fact, I had friends that were journeyman electricians in the union,
mm-hmm.
and union electricians, and their union, as part of their apprenticeship, required that not only are they learning the electrical trade, but they also had to get their bachelor's degree.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I'm not even sure that should matter in most cases.
It was interesting they were requiring them as part of their apprenticeship program.
Very well.
And
for one thing, it would prove how conscientious the worker was and whether they, in fact, could stick to the program. Years ago, the FBI, when they were only recruiting in college, they didn't care what you majored in. They just wanted to make sure that, you know, you were going to stick to something for 4 years and come out with a degree. So sometimes it's just the psychological proof more than the educational proof. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and you're talking about vocational schools. I remember I moved around a lot as a kid, but I went to a high school in Dayton, Ohio, and they had a high school that was strictly a vocational school. And they had options. Like one manager I worked for at Ohio Bell when I first started there,
mm-hmm.
He started when he was 15 going to the vocational school. And his part-time job was working for Ohio Bell. And they credited all that time. So when he retired at the age of 65, he had 50 years service.
Which is really nice. Now, Dayton back then was the small works capital of the world. And there were a ton of manufacturing jobs that some of them paid very handsomely.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a big one. I remember there, NCR.
Sure, of course.
And about five different GM plants.
Yeah.
Inland, Delco, Frigidaire.
Yeah.
Chrysler Air Temp was there, all kinds of stuff. But my brother was telling me now that where the campus or whatever you want to call it of NCR all belongs to the University of Dayton now. They're building on there.
Right.
And so I don't know where they're making their cash registers now, probably all overseas somewhere.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
So,
but NCR used to be right there by University Park.
From what I knew of people there, that was the place to work because they had an amusement park, or I guess what they want to call it, for their employees.
Yeah.
You know, they could go down, they had like a river down in there.
Oh,
where,
yeah. Yeah, right off of Patterson Boulevard. You betcha. It was beautiful.
Yeah. It was something.
Yeah.
And I remember one day I was working one day early in the morning going down to there, and I saw all these bulldozers and dump trucks down there, these 40-foot dump trucks. And they were just bulldozing those big brick buildings down. If you remember, they were all brick.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, it was like Shantz on one side and Patterson on the other, and it was almost like it was an island. It wasn't technically, but it was mostly surrounded by water, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but
it's all gone now. But the University of Dayton has been developing, buying up the land and developing it down in there and stuff like that on that whole area.
Yep.
But although I guess a lot of the other plants are gone now. A lot of them are shut down and stuff. So.
Well, that's right.
So
and that's sad but true. Places that were manufacturing giants just don't exist anymore.
No. But anyway, I'm going to get off here and let you go. I got to get up early in the morning I got my dialysis tomorrow. So.
Good luck.
Yeah, well, I did it yesterday, and I keep moving around. They give me a new people, and it's a good one now. The same person works with me every time, and so they get to know you, you know.
Good, excellent.
Yeah, the only thing is she's only been doing it about 6 months, so she's new at it.
Well, that's all right. You're learning together.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, good luck on that.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well,
appreciate it.
You guys take care.
You
okay.
too. All right.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, I don't know where NCR is making. I know where they're headquartered now. They moved to Atlanta, but I don't think they're actually making the cash registers or actually the information processing systems is what it is. I don't know if that's being made there or not. I would almost doubt it. But we'll get to Chuck in Rockford. James is on the south side. There's room for you, too, on WGN Radio. James, that's Jimmy McGriff, who would have turned 87 yesterday, born in 1936 in Philadelphia, in Germantown. And man, he did everything. The the vibes, the alto sax, the drums, the upright bass, you name it. And he did The Worm, and you're hearing it in 1968 on Solid State. And actually, it was Fatso Theus who wrote that. I hadn't thought about him in a while, so of course I got to play some Fatso Theus next. But yes, rest in peace, Jimmy McGriff. 888-876-5593 takes us to Chuck in Rockford. How's it going, Chuck?
Okay, it's been a while since
yes.
I've talked to you.
Yes, it has.
I suppose that your audience should know that I had met you in Rockford
yep.
about 30 years ago.
Yep, 31. 31 years ago.
Yeah.
In fact, it was 31 years ago tonight that the Libertarian Convention was in Schaumburg. I remember it was a Saturday night, yes, and I covered it for WROK. And, you know, I knew I was in trouble when I walked in, and I said, where's the Libertarian candidate for president? And they said, oh, he's in the bar. So.
Hey, did you ever get around the Northern Campus in DeKalb?
Oh, sure.
Had you ever been to Annie Glidden's mansion?
Yes.
My grandparents lived there.
Really?
They were taking care of Annie Glidden.
Wow.
And that was my grandfather that I was talking about. They made a cowboy out of at 13.
Wow.
You know, and I guess... somehow or other, he must have found an ad or something or other and communicated with Annie Glidden or the people that were handling stuff for her.
Yeah.
And they came from South Dakota over to the DeKalb Sycamore area.
Sure.
I got a couple of stories about Annie Glidden, if you want to hear them.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, as you know, the slogan there, Annie Glidden is more than just a road.
Oh, yeah. Well, she inherited that barbed wire fortune.
Yes, you know, obviously.
But this was during the Prohibition period. My grandfather wanted to make some applejack, and... Annie Glidden was a temperance person, you know. She got in there and sabotaged it on him and put some soda in so it wouldn't ferment.
Oh, that's great.
My dad was riding motorcycle when they lived there with her, and he had some riding breeches, and Annie Glidden seemed to think they were hers. They had horses and stuff around
there,
you know, and all that. And a greenhouse and a bunch of stuff. But anyhow, she saw my dad's riding breeches, and she went to put them on, and she got them halfway on and couldn't get out of them.
Oh, that's great.
my grandfather had to help her out of the breeches.
Perfect.
That's a story about Annie Glidden getting into my dad's pants.
Yeah, I love that. Hang on a minute. Don't go away, Chuck. Stay right where you are.
Okay.
And we'll pick it up there. I think we're going to talk about cell phones. Yeah, in cars in the 60s. I certainly had one. But like I say, it was more ship to shore than anything. Although dials came in by then for what good they did. We'll get to Michael. He's in his truck in Chicago. And talk about radio. One of my favorites. And James and all his 9,832 links. All that and more. And there's still room for you on WGN Radio.
Say, Fatso, that's your good old body band's dance. You still love her too, don't you? What? You can't fool me. Remember, I'm your heart. Be cool, my heart. You know how much I care. Be cool, my heart. When she's around, beware to press her lips to mine is my desire. But if I do, then who put out the fire?
So be cool.
WGN Radio. Had to play some Fatso Theus, yes, and the Flares, on Aladdin. And that was actually written by Leon Renee. Yeah, Class Records and so much more. So 888-876-5593. Talking to Chuck in Rockford. Rockford, cell phones of the 60s. And oh, how I remember them. I remember so well when we finally got them where they actually had a dial and we got the improved mobile system, the IMTS.
Am I on?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I had one in a 65 Cadillac.
Yeah.
And I had it for about 2 years, but I was supposed to have two lines on it, and it would honk the horn when I got a call. And when I was in Chicago, I used the North Shore Communications it would be more or less like they would patch me into the regular, phone system.
Right. But what was funny about this is even though theoretically you had a dial, and of course you remember the advertisements, they were big saying, oh, full duplex, ain't that wonderful, but you still had a very limited number of channels. Even in Chicago, you might have had up to six. In small places, maybe you had one or two. And of course, it was a tone signaling thing, the 2000 and the 2150 and all that. But in any event, you're right, it would switch to a central office, and then the world could be your oyster, but I remember them so well. And yes, that key, I'd always lose the damn key. So
it was kind of funny with that. I had a little FM antenna on the back fender, and I had people just kind of
wondering what that might be.
Wanting to approach the car, they'd see that antenna sticking out of there, and I can remember one guy saying, "It's a cop."
Oh, jeez.
I went to make a left turn, and I wasn't aware that I couldn't make that. I think it was there on Michigan in Chicago.
Yeah,
and I'd signaled for it and everything, and then when I realized I couldn't make it, I was getting ready to abort, and there was a cop standing there, and I had the top down on the convertible, and he waved at me, and kind of gave me the signal that he went and stopped the traffic that was coming the other way.
Oh, wow.
And waved me across.
How nice.
And then he wanted to make sure that I saw his badge.
How nice. That's great.
Anyhow, I sure miss that automobile.
Oh, I'll bet. Yes, absolutely. 65 was a good year, but it was the end of the Finns.
Oh, yeah. But, I got to where I could judge that, where the fenders were and everything on the car.
God,
and
yes.
It was just almost like riding a bicycle, I guess.
Well, thank God for hood ornaments is all I can say.
Yeah. The guy that was talking about working in Germany.
Yes.
I had a friend that was working over there. I taught him quite a bit about some running a mill and things like that, and he got a job with an outfit where they sent him all over, like South America and Germany. But they said that they could have him working over in Germany and pay for all the extras, and it still would work out cheaper than having local personnel.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And that just shows you the difference, in the system, because I guess the guys have big vacations and all.
Yeah, the month of August, basically. All of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if somebody has to pay for it.
Well, yes, yes, your tax dollars at work are theirs anyway. Good to talk to you. Thanks. Appreciate it, Chuck.
Yeah, likewise.
All right.
Take care.
Bye. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I remember those 60s phones so well. Motorola made that standard one. And, you know, you'd also see the Bell System ones that still said General Electric on them and all that. But that Motorola was one of my faves. It had a dial, but, yeah, for what good it did you. All right. So Michael is in a truck in Chicago. Welcome to WGN Radio. What's happening tonight, Michael?
Hello. Nice to hear your voice, Scott. Well, it's been a while.
Yeah, I'm glad you're calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to get your advice since you're such a seer when it comes to radio at all. And I was driving to Chicago last night up the Eagle River, Wisconsin, about 350 miles. And in Milwaukee, there were so many radio stations available on AM, and they were so clear. And I thought, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a smaller market than Chicago. But yet in Chicago, there's a lot of static, and there's this humming sound in the back of the stations, of the broadcast, I should say, a lot. I just didn't know whether you could explain that to me, why it might be clear up there.
Well, firstly, it's going to vary night to night. When you're talking about nighttime listening, the ionosphere layer is finicky. So one night it can be just smooth sailing, and another night it can be trash. That's part of it. But the other thing is when you're talking about an area that is as dense as Chicago, there is so much interference to AM that it would be impossible to list it all. So that's part of the problem. As far as you know, hums and things like that can be a variety of things, including just a bad audio chain from a station. But basically, when you're dealing with that level of population, you're dealing with a ton of interference, and that's why so many people are saying, well, the AM band is passe, but I would disagree with it.
I would agree with you, too, and I'm just a little bit frustrating, you know, because inevitably, you hear something you want to listen to closely, whether it's someone speaking or a song, and
yeah,
everything goes haywire. You know?
Well, right. At night, on the ionosphere layer, it's going to fade in and out. And when I was a kid, I used to think almost that, you know, when the call letters came on, they turned off the stations because I could listen for an hour and not hear the call letters. And that was fairly common. But it pains me that you can have all these car manufacturers basically answering a senator by saying that people can listen to AM on the internet. And I think to myself, no, when you're driving in the middle of nowhere, to presuppose that you've got a signal from any cell carrier, you're out of your mind. Maybe that's true in downtown D.C., but not on the trip you took last night. So,
one last bit of information, Raleigh. It's unrelated, but Ken Brady, who was a member of the Casinos, is still alive.
Oh, good.
And I ran into him in a bar and restaurant on the south side of Chicago there in Clear Ridge, and of course the song was on the jukebox, so he put it on, which is wonderful. I thought you would appreciate knowing that he's still around.
Yes, and I understand that he performs as Ken Brady's Casinos. Now, the lead singer, when Then You Can Tell Me Goodbye was a hit, was Gene Hughes, and he's no longer with us, but Ken is still singing, and I think that they're still based in Cincinnati.
Well, you could be right. I know he's living in Chicago.
That's great.
He's doing well.
I'm so glad to hear that. I'm pretty sure he owns the trademark now, and good for him. We all miss Gene Hughes, but it's wonderful to see the Casinos are still around in any incarnation.
If I run into him again, I'll ask him to call the show.
I hope he will. That would be wonderful. I'd look forward to it. The last time I had heard about him personally, he was living in Lakeland, Florida. So I don't know. Maybe now he's living in Chicago.
Yeah. What about Don Cherry?
Don Cherry goes back much further.
All right.
You know, I mean, when you're talking Don Cherry, you're talking about a guy who was born in 1924. So, and of course, his biggest hit was Band of Gold in 1955. But Don Cherry died, and I think it was 2018. I'm not sure, but it's been about 5 years.
Well, nice long life. That's fabulous.
Exactly. He was in his 90s.
one last request, Raleigh. If you could possibly maybe play a Jerry Butler tune or Gerald,
yeah.
Staircase to Heaven.
Jerry Butler, do you have a favorite?
Not really.
Okay, then I'll pick mine. I'll pick mine and you'll hear it next.
Okay, thank you very much, Raleigh.
Okay, thanks. Okay, bye. You know, I say that, and I shouldn't be so cavalier because I've got a whole list of Jerry Butler favorites, but I'll play the one I was thinking of when I said it. So that'll be next, and then we got Fran, and then we got James, and hopefully we have you. By the way, tomorrow night, we got a full show, and it was Carol who had to tell me that because I thought we were preempted on someone. She's, what calendar are you looking at? Yeah, well, we're not preempted. We're on live at 10 p.m. Central Time tomorrow night for 3 big hours. So you can be planning now what you want to talk about because, of course, as usual, I have absolutely no idea. We'll pick it up right there with Jerry Butler on WGN Radio.
I said goodbye to my love. I didn't mean to make her cry. I didn't realize that I love. Now I need her by my side. Should have told the spoon to stop it. You should have made this blind man see. I've got my pride back in my pocket.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Just enjoying that a little too much. Jerry Butler, Mr. Dream Merchant. Yeah, it's the one that takes me where I want to go. 1967 on Mercury. Not one of his biggest hits, but man, I do think that's my all-time fave. All right, so 888-876-5593 takes us to Fran in Austin. What's happening tonight, Fran?
Oh, not much. I love that song, too.
Yeah, that's the one.
That was the one you picked.
Yeah, and how could it not be a huge hit?
I don't know. Mm. I don't know. I do remember hearing it when I was younger.
Oh, yeah. No, it was on the radio. It followed I Dig You Baby, which
was... plenty of airplay, as far as I heard. Yeah. But it just...
didn't want a big hit. Yeah, I Dig You Baby, which was on right before it got to the top 10 on the R&B, but not this one.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I think this is a much better song.
I do too.
But you were talking earlier about the kids still living at home.
Yeah.
I know, God, I could not wait to move out. I moved out as soon as I graduated from high school. I moved out that summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but I could afford to. Apartments were not that expensive compared to, you know, what I was getting at that time. And I didn't want mom's help.
Right.
You know, I wanted to go do it myself, and, you know, mom was against it, but finally realized that I was going to do it whether she was for or against it, so she decided it'd be better to help me than not.
Right. Right.
But now I think, for one thing, apartment rents are just incredibly high.
Unbelievable. And I don't know how anybody makes it anymore as far as that goes. But beyond the logistics of it, you know, when most of us were younger, the idea of being on our own was what was so important. And everything in life has an opportunity cost, of course, and we had to figure out how we were going to do it. But it seems now that kids are perfectly fine staying at home, and I don't understand that mindset.
Yeah, they're fine staying at home. They're fine not having a car. And I've always said the worst thing about being blind is that I can't drive.
Agreed, because there is such a freedom to that.
Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, you know, sometimes I don't like the way we're treated and that sort of thing, but if I had a car, I would probably hardly ever be home.
Exactly. Well, right, you could do what you wanted on your own terms, even at gas at $4.50 a gallon.
That's right. But I think now, you know, the whole thing that we grew up, or at least I grew up, and Gary did too, believing that we could do it as well, if not better, than our parents. And, you know...
Well, we not only could, for the most part, we had to. You know, if you're over a certain age, you weren't thinking that your parents would support you. You were planning for the days when you'd have to support them.
Exactly, and it's backwards now. The older parents are supporting the younger kids.
Exactly.
Up until, you know, and the kids don't seem to mind that. And, yeah, that's the thing that I don't get. But I think it's kind of, I get it in a way because it's kind of like, okay, if they think about it, they're not going to do better than their parents in most cases, in a lot of. And if... we read an article recently about kids not wanting to go to college and college admissions going down and so forth. And, well, you know, with the cost of it, that's
part of it. Well, that's right. I don't blame them.
But and another thing is, you know, okay, yeah, my big sister went to college, and what's she doing now? Working at McDonald's.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, they don't have to go to college, but have a trade, do something.
Yeah. Well, it's like my stepbrother. His mother was a teacher, and she was, you know, just insistent that he go to college. And all he liked to do was fix things.
Oh,
he was wonderful at fixing cars. I mean, you give him something that needs to be fixed, he can fix it if it's fixable. And, you know, so all that money to put him, and he didn't want anything to do, I mean, he didn't have a job that had anything to do with his education.
No, of course not. Of course not.
And he didn't do well in college, but they kept pushing him.
Right.
You know, and me, I've got all this education and nothing to do with it.
Right, right. Well, yeah, the education for the sake of education is so misguided. And I think with the cost now, I think people are finally starting to see that maybe there's logic there. So hopefully that'll be a turnaround. But yeah, I don't understand either end of the equation. The kids who are perfectly fine staying home, and the parents who are perfectly fine not even charging them rent.
Oh, my God, no. The time I had to move back to my mom's house for a while, I went through some hard times and had to move back and, you know, with my tail between my legs, here I am again. But I paid rent.
Right, right. Well, the majority of the parents aren't asking for that today, according to the surveys. So I'm not sure what they're fostering. Maybe if their goal is dependence and they never want the kid to be independent, that'll work. But it's obviously nothing that a talk radio host is going to solve because it's happening on so many levels. But when you see survey after survey and you read these facts, it's just startling. And I don't know what the upshot is. I won't be here to see it, but it's a change.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting generation. I've seen a lot of people around here, and I've noticed, you know, some kind of interesting similarities.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I had a friend who, she was determined in the 90s that she was not going to raise her little girl the way she was raised.
Uh-oh.
She was raised too strictly.
Uh-oh.
And so this little girl, it ruined hers and my friendship because this girl was just,
a holy terror.
Do anything.
Yeah, yeah. What jail is she in now?
She would, let's see. She'd be probably in her 30s now.
Yeah, and she's not in jail?
I don't know. I haven't seen this woman in years, but I would imagine, you know, because, I mean, well, you couldn't say no to her.
Mm-hmm.
You could not say anything that sounded negative.
I'd be curious. I wish you could find her just to, you know, not to get in touch with her, but just to find out what happened to this kid. I'd love to know.
I would love to find that out myself because I remember one day she was throwing things at me because her mother asked her to clear the steps so I could, you know, get out of the house. And she had her toys kind of spread out. And she refused to do it, and her mother moved her just a slight bit. And she went ballistic. I mean, she threw toys. She slapped out at her mother. She slapped out at me. And there was nothing
else. Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not appropriate, Zoe. That's not nice.
Well, I hope she has an odd enough last name that you can look her up. That's your assignment. Find out what happened
okay.
to Zoe. I want to know.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
All right, find out. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Right.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the things. And yeah, John doesn't have that gene, but you know, it's me. I have the tabloid supermarket slime from the checkout line, National Enquirer mentality. I always want to know. So now I need to know about Zoe, what happened to her. And of course, I need to know about all of James' stories, and I can't believe the evening has ended. But James, we got 3 hours tomorrow night, and that will give me plenty of time not only to talk to you, but to review some of those stories. He sends the absolute best links, let me tell you what, just like Carol does, the absolute best show prep. And they make me sound like I know what I'm doing. Trust me, I don't. But I have 21 hours to pull it off again. Until then, that's a wrap. So I hope we'll reconvene with your calls. In the meantime, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. We thank John for screening your calls. I thank you for calling. You saved me again. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.